stretches, puts up a three. Long go, rebound box, back out to Allen. History final, bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
Ovechkin, full blast the other way. Fires, score! The Caps win.
Here come the Leafs. It's their turn to center Austin Matthews with Connor Brown. In under Kaiser. Gardner comes up late. His pass side of the net. Matthews backhander scores!
It'll be Wade up top. He gets a pick for Bosch. Wade turns the corner. Behind his back. Bosch for the lead. Got it! 5 tenths left. Bosch.
And we are back on the Crunch, folks. I'm your host, Nick LaPenna. Thanks for tuning in. 7:05 Eastern, 4:05 Pacific, and something 05 everywhere else in the world. Now, over the weekend, before I dive in here to the agenda, over the weekend, we had a couple interesting things in the National Hockey League happen. We had the NHL All-Star Weekend, which usually is a bit of a dud. I'm not for All-Star challenges in any sports. I definitely didn't watch the Pro Bowl this weekend either, which was a farce to say the least. The NBA dunk contest is definitely something I like to watch. However, no one really tries. And I don't even blame the players for this, just the concept is interesting, but no one really tries because no one wants to get hurt. They don't mean anything. The MLB one, mind you, is pretty interesting and entertaining, to say the least, because it does mean something. The winner of the All-Star game, it's the AL and the NL, equivalent of East versus West, but the winner gets home field advantage during the World Series. Now, that's pretty interesting, and it's why I like the MLB All-Star game, but at the same token, it's hard to get hurt in baseball. So in that sense, you really got a nice blueprint to make, you know, an All-Star game special like that. But I'm going to break down here on the agenda of the Crunch, second episode here this 2019 year. I'll break down NHL All-Star Weekend and talk about why it was a fantastic move by the NHL to allow some of the top women to partake in the festivities, specifically the skills competition. I'm going to break down the Leafs' blockbuster deal late last night, Kyle Dubas making his mark in his first major trade with the LA Kings. I'll then transition over and talk about the Farmers Insurance Open. Justin Rose continuing his supremely hot streak. He's the world number one and he wins there. We'll check in on Tiger and his performance and whether my prediction was on the money or woefully incorrect. I'll then bring on NASCAR and Formula One analyst Matthew Zerzola to break down the Rolex 24 race over the weekend and what we can expect to see in the next short while in racing. There's a lot to talk about on that front. And then I will end this segment with my Super Bowl pick and why. And why that's the most important reason, or the most important reason, excuse me, I should say, that the blank will win the Super Bowl. I won't spoil it until then. Folks, I'll be back right after this break, but until then, just enjoy the intro.
James catches, puts up a three. Long go, rebound box. Back out to Allen. History final. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
Ovechkin, full blast the other way. Fires. Score! Fantastic work at both ends of the rink. And the Caps win.
Here come the Leafs. It's their turn. Center Austin Matthews with Connor Brown. In under Kaiser. Gardner comes up late. His pass side of the net. Matthews backhander scores!
It'll be Wade up top. gets a pick for Bosch. Wade turns the corner. Behind his back. Bosch for the lead. Got it! 5 tenths left. Bosch.
And folks, I also want to note here on the podcast / radio show, we'll be uploading the audio file to RadioLaurier.com about a week after each show. So last week's show should be here any day now. This show will then be uploaded within about a week as well. So keep your eyes out for that. Now let's break down the NHL All-Star Weekend. And it caused a lot of controversy, and frankly, this is exactly what the NHL needed. People didn't really care about the NHL All-Star Weekend for a few years now, and they brought out a lot of the top women skaters to partake in some of the skills competitions. That included fastest skater, target practice, accuracy, passing, you name it. And I thought it was a really great move. Now, these weren't just any women. These were a lot of them were Olympic champions from the U.S. and the Canadian women's national teams. And frankly, this was a fantastic move. You know, I saw a lot of backlash, both on social media, online, and elsewhere, about it because it was a quote-unquote NHL All-Star game, and there's no women in the NHL. That is true, but I want to make a couple points on this. The first is, no one has given a bleep about the NHL All-Star game in decades. I mean, it's basically a nonsense weekend, a little bit of fun sprinkled in. You know, it's nice for some of those smaller markets to host an event, but no one's watching the All-Star game. So for them to kind of spice it up and look to bring in more audiences is a great idea. The second point that people need to consider, and that they don't, is that they're not just a hockey fan, they are a consumer. And the NHL is a business. It is a incorporated enterprise. And what people need to understand is that Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, does not really care so much about who wins or what markets or what teams move on. He cares about the bottom line and the profit on the growth on a global stage. So I don't see why not. I don't see why we can't have women, especially good, talented women, part of the NHL All-Star festivities. It opens up a huge new base. I saw a lot of positive feedback from younger girls, older women who said, you know what, that's really fun. It's nice to see. I've played hockey my whole life, you know, and maybe have felt a tad underrepresented, right? Other than every 4 years at the Olympic Games where women's hockey will be broadcasted. Other than that, it's not really possible to watch women's hockey. I frankly can't tell you a single team in the highest women's hockey league division. So I think the NHL did a great move there, really expanded their base, and this is what you call positioning, right? The women who like sports is a fixed segment in the world, and they'll like some sports, not others, but providing some, you know, perspective and advertising and basically just throwing them a bone as a consumer to really reach out to them, I think is important. I think it was a great move by the NHL, and anyone who thinks otherwise is butthurt for no reason. The event doesn't mean anything in terms of the standings. It doesn't mean anything in terms of legacy. It's just a fun weekend where you can celebrate the top hockey players in the world. And there's some really good women's hockey players. And frankly, a lot of them did well in the skills competition. So it wasn't a complete farce. And let's transition over to the Leafs. Blockbuster move here from young GM Kyle Dubas. Swinging for the fences here and bringing in Jake Muzzin from the LA Kings in exchange for a couple prospects and a first-round pick, including Carl Grundstrom. And let me just say this. What a fantastic move. And when we were talking about bringing the panel out here, And the panel got back to me and said, look, why bother us calling in? Because everyone, including us, agrees that this is a smart pickup. This guy is a good defenseman. All right, he's 6'3", 213. Right away, it tells you he's got some size and he'll throw the body a little bit. That's exactly what the Leafs need. I haven't even got into any of his characteristics, stats, or traits. And I'm telling you right now, this is exactly what the Leafs need. Okay, he's a big minute muncher over in LA. He played with Drew Doughty on that first unit. And let me tell you something. The Kings this year have been abysmal. Okay, minus 36 goal differential as a team. Drew Doughty is minus 16. Jake Muzzin, plus 10. Like, how is that possible? And he's 21 and a half minutes a game, and he's a plus 10 playing against the toughest in the Western Conference. This guy's a minute muncher. He played on the World Cup for Team Canada, and Babcock knows him. Babcock was obviously the coach of that gold medal, or I guess World Cup winning Canada team. The tournament in itself wasn't something that I was really into. I guess it was kind of cool, and did it replace the Olympics in terms of excitement? Like, not really, but it was still interesting to watch, and it's the best hockey players playing hockey in the world and for their country, so I'm always going to tune in on that front. But Jake Muzzin was a legitimate defender. He played on that team with guys like Doughty and Pietrangelo, etc. I mean, this guy's no joke. He is a top four defenseman, and we didn't mortgage the farm. We didn't sell or trade Kapanen or Janssen or Liljegren or Rasmus Sandin. I mean, we gave away a couple decent, you know, mid-tier to upper-tier prospects, no doubt, along with our first-round selection, which will be in the bottom third this year, 20 to 30, if I had to make a rough estimate. But it's totally worth it. This is a no-brainer. This is what contenders do. And I've said on the show before, I love my Leafs, and I think we have great talent. But frankly, I've said before, we're a bit of a pretender. And this is the type of move that can help transition us from pretender to contender, right? Is he you know, the top two-way defenseman? No, he's decent. He's got a couple 40-point seasons in him, three to be exact. I mean, he's a solid puck mover. He was in the Calder race back when he was a young kid, and he was in the Norris Memorial Trophy consideration a couple years ago with his 40-point campaign. But look, this guy is going to eat minutes. He can play both sides. He was on that Kings Cup winning team. Brings some leadership and winning experience. I can't stress that enough. Leadership and winning experience. And look, frankly, he's got strong Fenwick and Corsi. I brought this up last week when talking about Gardner. I like guys who make strong moves with the puck and who have good possession. It's not the be-all and end-all statistic, but I really like guys, and you'll notice just from the eye test as well, these are kind of the two extremes, right? Those in-depth statistics versus the eye test. But guys who are higher in Corsi ratings, right, or Fenwick ratings, which is, just to remind my viewers here, forward versus for defense. So what I mean by that is the chances and scoring chances that your team gets versus the scoring chances against you when you're on the ice. And these are high-quality chances. This guy's just been a monster. Like, his whole career, he's up in the 50s, 1 year in 62.8. I like guys who are strong that way with the puck and command a presence when they're on the ice. This guy's a good defenseman, all right? And it's exactly what we need, because another strong point is that he has another year left on his contract. That cannot be understated, especially at a very low price, $4 million. Look, we're going to have cap woes next year, no doubt about it, okay? Jake Gardner is looking like one of the guys on the outside looking in, and we need a strong defenseman. And this guy brings it. Now, do I mind Gardner signing again? I said last week, a 10% increase, right? You give him a 10% raise, I don't mind him staying. But he does not deserve, under any circumstances, one of those big fat contracts that you get in free agency. He's just not worth it. right? And I think we have guys who can replace a majority of his output for like a fraction of the cost. Callie Rosen, we went over this last week, $750,000 a year. He'll get 80% of the points Gardner does, and he'll be decent defensively. So, again, I love this move. It helps shore up the D. Hainsey can go back to the third pairing. Hainsey should not be on the first pairing under any circumstances. He'll be able to likely move back with Dermott, give him some veteran presence. Hainsey's obviously been a cup winner before, so I'd keep him in the lineup. The only problem for the Leafs is now we have five lefties, it looks like, if Ozhuganov is then in the press box. Five lefties, I don't really like that. I'd rather have a right-handed defenseman, but at the end of the day, you take what you can get. I haven't seen much out there. Maybe Brett Pesky. He had been linked to William Nylander. We're obviously not going to trade Nylander now. But it'll be interesting to see. I really like this move. It's the first step in turning the Leafs from a pretender to a contender to really, really, really battle with the, you know, the Tampas and the Washingtons. And even, you know, I'll throw the Pittsburghs in there, right? The former champions who turn it up a notch in the playoffs. This is the type of guy you need, and I'm very excited to see what the future holds, no doubt about it. After the break, I'm going to break down the Farmers Insurance Open. Justin Rose, a huge win for him. He keeps his hot streak going. I'll break down Tiger's return and debut to the 2019 season and whether my prediction was right. Remember, folks, last week I said, and I predicted he would come in 24th in the Farmers Insurance Open just because he's not the strongest coming off of a long layover. He's actually a lot better the week after playing a tournament in back-to-backs. It seems to warm him up. So we'll see how he did. And later in the show, I'll bring on NASCAR and Formula One analyst Matthew Zerzolo to break down the Rolex 24 and more. Stick around, folks. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. And we are back on The Crunch, folks. I'm your host, Nick LaPenna, 7:23 Eastern Time. We're going to break down the Farmers Insurance Open here. Justin Rose, a 21 underscore to win that tournament over in San Diego at the Torrey Pines South Course. And what a tournament it was. Rose dominated basically from the outset. He was right at the top with John Rahm after that first day and kept the momentum going. And finished with the final round of three under. He's been on a hot streak of late, world number one, and I've given Rose a little bit of flack, not his fault. I mean, he kind of reminds me of a better version of Ricky Fowler. And what do I mean by that? Look, Ricky is a good player, a great player, I may add, and he gets a lot of top 10, top 5 finishes, but he can't win. He has not won in now 2 years. People do not, you know, realize that about Ricky Fowler, and Rose gets a bit of the knock, too, because he doesn't win that often, but he's number one in the world and has been consistently, at least bouncing around for the better part of 2 years, without many wins. He'll come in the top five in a tournament or, you know, a top three finish, which is impressive, but he'll never win. So it's nice to see Rose getting on that hump here, getting off the hump early into the 2019 campaign and getting another W here to go along with his FedEx Cup win last fall and recent wins. He's been on a tear, and you know, you got to give him credit. A lot of people weren't happy that he won the FedEx Cup without really winning it many tournaments down the stretch, but he's been putting it together and he's been winning, so salute to him. Let's break down Tiger Woods' performance. Remember, I predicted he would come 24th. I mentioned, look, Tiger's a great player, no doubt about it, but coming off a lengthy rest, he just doesn't seem to have that touch. And it was there again. I predicted 24th. He came 20th. And it, honestly, if he had missed another putt, he would have come 24th. And Tiger played really well. I'll give him credit. He really zoned in for the better part of the tournament. What let him down from really contending was that putter. Tiger led the tournament in lip-outs. And if he had, say, sunk half of those lip-outs, right, I believe there was eight technically counted lip-outs. If he had sunk four of those, I mean, that's a top 10 finish. So the Big Cat came in and really played well. His irons were strong. His driving was really good. I didn't remember him driving this well to start the year last year. I mean, it was very impressive. And honestly, I got to say, pretty good performance from him in terms of how he placed 20th, right? It wasn't him scrambling and kind of figuring it out late to get 20th. It was him actually playing quite dominant golf and having a few lip-outs and having a couple bad breaks. So that was really the difference for Tiger, which I was surprised. But I'm basically correct here, just a couple places off. Tiger came in and played pretty well, but at the end of the day, he comes 20th. As we look ahead at Tiger's schedule, we know he will be at Riviera. That's in early February, so look for him again to play pretty well. I mean, this isn't the layoff that was just taken going into the Farmers Insurance Open. This will be a couple weeks off before he goes to Riviera over in Pacific Palitas's in California at the Riviera Country Club. But it'll be interesting to see Tiger and what he does. We have a couple World Golf Championships coming up. The season has been pushed back so that it does not conflict with the NFL. So that means the Players Championship is in March. We have a lot of good golf coming up. And we'll have to see how Tiger does there at Riviera. I said the Riviera course is a place where he could win again. I'm sticking by it. I'll break down a prediction closer to the date. But I think he's really strong there, and I expect to see him continue some of that momentum that, frankly, I was surprised. That was a pretty good 20th place finish, and that was about as worst as he could have had, just with the bad breaks. He led the tournament in lip-outs. So a couple adjustments with the putter, and we'll see the Big Cat back in the winner's circle. I have no doubt about it. Folks, stick around. Right after the break, I'm going to have NASCAR and Formula One analyst Matthew Zerzolo on. We're going to break down the Rolex 24 race and more. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. And we are back on The Crunch. Joining me now, NASCAR and Formula One analyst Matthew Zerzolo. Matthew, how you doing?
Not too bad, Nicholas. Thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show here. So let's break down the Rolex 24. What do you see? Who do you like? Who won? Give us some updates there.
Well, this is one of the most interesting Rolex 24s that we ever had in years. This one only had 14 hours of racing instead of the usual 24 hours. It was rained out. The rain was horrible, so they had to put a red flag out. Cars are crashing. It was horrible. So let's run through the winners quickly. So in the DPI category, we had Team Kona Minota with Fernando Alonso behind the wheel. F1 star, also an LMP1 star now, and he was fantastic. He jumped from ninth place all the way to first in that class, which is very, very hard to do. And in the Wayne Taylor machine, like, that is an incredible team to be with. And they were able to secure the win before the red flag was drawn. In GTLM, we had the BMW number 25 team, RLL team, and they did a fantastic job as well. It sucks for their partner team, the number 24 car, because they had Alexander Zadardi, who is a Paralympic now, and he lost his legs in 2001. And this is the first time he's returned to U.S. soil to race, so it was very big to see him racing again. It's just unfortunate he didn't have a good event. The GTD winner was the GRT Grasser Racing Team and the Lamborghini Huracan GT3. And lastly, the LMP2 winners were the Dragon Speed Orca. Another big event that happened there was that Mazda broke the 26-year-old lap record, which is pretty astonishing, even though Mazda also had a terrible time at the event. Both of their cars were taken out within the early hours of the event. But otherwise, the racing was brilliant before the rain came. Ford and Porsche are having great battles, and the rest of the season we should be looking out for that, Nicola.
Thanks, Matthew. You're absolutely right. Lots happening over the weekend. Let's transition here over to the NASCAR updates and the silly season, as they say. Give us some insight on that.
So NASCAR's had a lot of driver changing and crew chief changing. So Martin Truex Jr., who formerly won the championship in 2017, previous championship title holder, now has been changed to a different team. He is racing for Joe Gibbs now. Furniture Row Racing has closed down, and he is taking Daniel Suarez' ride in the number 19, which with his crew chief, Cole Pern. So that's going to be one team to really look out for. Bass Pro Shops is also sponsoring them for 20 of the 36 races. So he's got a full-time sponsorship almost. Ryan Newman, another surprise there. He's jumping to the number 6 car of Roush Fenway Racing. That's going to be another interesting pair. We got the veteran Ryan Newman. Then we got kind of the rookie Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I feel like that team's going to have a really big push this year, and they're going to be really up there. So look out for them. Kurt Busch going to the number 1 car, Chip Ganassi. That's going to be an interesting team. Another veteran with a kind of rookie driver being Kyle Larson. So that's going to be another team to look out for. Obviously, McMurray not in a ride anymore. He has a one-time deal to run the Daytona 500 in the number 40 car. So let's see how he does in his last race. Then he'll be in the Fox booth doing announcing. So Matt DiBenedetto, a guy so underrated, is finally getting his chance. He's going to the number 95 car of Levine Racing, who has an alliance with Joe Gibbs. That is going to be one fantastic team. They should be competing for wins because of the Joe Gibbs alliance, which is a very strong team. Matt DiBenedetto, a fan favorite, very good driver. So really, we should be looking out for him. Otherwise, lastly, Suarez in the 41 car, part of Haas Racing. Haas, a very strong team. So maybe Suarez can finally get his chance to show how he was the 2016 Xfinity championship winner. So let's see if he can finally show that he's a good driver, unlike what he's been racing with Joe Gibbs and hasn't been really consistent, hasn't had a win. So anything can happen there. There's been testing at Auto Club for the tires. We got this new aero package in NASCAR, which has been pretty good. Suarez, we saw him in the 41. Joey Logano, 2018 champion, he was there testing, and Martin Truex Jr. in the 19 car. So I would be looking for Joey Logano, Team Penske. Going to be very strong this year. Brad Keselowski won in 2012, and he's really wanting to win. After his teammate just won this year in 2018, it's going to really spark him to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that insight. We'll definitely have to keep an eye on some of the changes there over in NASCAR. Now let's get into the Formula One. Can you break down some of the off-season updates and provide us some insight on what's to come?
So Formula One, the cars are just being released as of February now, so we really haven't seen the cars. There's a new aero package that has been in effect now, which the front splitter has been more simplified to make it for closer battles and stuff, so there's not more advantages. The team will put more money into the splitter. So that, and also the wing has been changed. The wing is now larger and a little bit less complex, just like the splitter, to make the racing even more engaging and more like across the board, instead of the more top teams have a better advantage. So now teams like Toro Rosso are also going to be very competitive because they've kind of taken the aerodynamics down a level, which in my opinion, I think is what they really needed to do. So over the coming months of February, we're going to be seeing the cars being released. We're going to see how they really look with the new splitter, new wing. So Toro Rosso is February 11th, Renault is February 12th, Racing Point, a Toronto team actually, which is kind of interesting. They're being released in Toronto at the Canadian International Auto Show on February 13th. So if anybody's in Toronto, I would go watch that. That's something that rarely ever happens in Toronto. McLaren is February 14th, Ferrari is February 15th, and the rest, like Mercedes and Alfa, are to be announced still.
Awesome. Thanks, Matthew. I appreciate the update. We'll keep an eye out on those dates, especially the McLaren one here in mid-February. That's one I definitely will keep my eye on. Thank you for all the insight. We'll get back to you for due course.
Yep. Sounds good, Nicola. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. We love to have you on the show. After the break, stick around, folks. I break down my Super Bowl pick coming up this Sunday. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. We are back on The Crunch, folks. It is Super Bowl weekend coming up, and boy, I can't wait. I broke down last week how brutal the Saints loss was. Probably the worst officiating mistake in sports history. You know, there's been some interesting developments on that front, including where some of the refs are from. We found out four of them from Southern California. I won't go into any of that tonight, because, frankly, it is over. There's not much I can do. I'm still sick to my stomach, and I may well be for a long time. But what I am going to do right now is break down the Super Bowl. New England Patriots and the LA Rams are going to collide in Atlanta. And there's a few reasons why I believe the New England Patriots will be successful. The first is Tom Brady. Tom Brady has been, as per usual, lights out. No debate. He's the greatest of all time in football, and there's a reason for that. He is a winner. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. There are two people in sports I do not bet against. Floyd Money Mayweather Jr. and Thomas Brady. That's it. That is it. And the remarkable thing about Brady is not just his sustained excellence, it's the way he's doing it, right? People don't really want to give him credit because in the season his numbers haven't looked as great, but in these two playoff games he has stepped up and he has showed out. What has he done differently compared to the last few years? I'm going to break that down right now. Look, Tom Brady cannot throw it as far or as fast as he did a decade ago, even a half decade ago. What is he doing now, though? He is releasing the ball at lightning-quick precision. He is averaging 2.1 seconds from snap to release to get the ball to the receiver. It's the best in pro football by over 0.3 seconds. No other QB is doing it that fast. And what does that mean? That means that the defensive ends and the linebackers who are trying to rush Brady and even that O-line of the Patriots just can't get to him. You just can't. He releases the ball to a receiver before they can even lay a hand on him or even get into the passing lane. It's just another remarkable use of talent by Brady. And why can he do it so quickly? Why is he better than anyone else at it as he's in his 40s? He is frankly better because he knows how to read offenses. His experience is coming into play, and he's using his still talented arm to make things happen. Just unbelievable. 2.1 seconds. How does he do it? He can release on short routes to Edelman or even over the middle. He's releasing it very, very quickly in play action even. So I marvel at it. He is the greatest of all time. And I think he will put on another strong performance that the LA Rams will just not be able to compete with. The second reason why I think the New England Patriots will win is because of depth. I think most people agree that the New England roster is one of the weakest it's been in a while. And it's been propped up recently by Brady, a surprising strong running back in Sony Michel, and Bill Belichick's schemes. Their depth is decent, but it's not great. The problem for the Rams is that they have a lot of high-end talent. They went out and spent a lot to get high-end guys. Aaron Donald comes to mind. Sue. I mean, Woods, Cooks, and Goff are not cheap. You know, they have talent. The problem is it leaves the rest of the roster a little bleak. And let me tell you something, I've played pro sports before. Well, not pro. I should rephrase that. I've played sports before, and a lot of them. However, in those big, big games, and it doesn't get bigger than the Super Bowl, you ever notice that it's those guys who aren't talked about much, who don't have much hoopla around them or a strong aura that make the big plays? Because what happens? Everyone takes away their weapons. No coach goes in and says, you know what, if we lose today, it's just because guys like Aaron Donald, superstars, were just too good. No, they don't. They don't. They take that superstar away in the biggest game, and they say, if you're going to beat me, you're going to better bring it from those second and third tier guys. That's how you'll beat me, because I am not letting you beat me with your top option. Great players usually will find a way to overcome that. But if you notice, and this goes for every sport, you usually don't see the star player putting up hat tricks or putting up, you know, insane performances in game sevens, right? You look at LeBron's numbers, supremely talented, second best player of all time. Is there a memorable moment from his game sevens? No, not really. He plays well. He always does. But the teams don't let the best beat you. And that's the problem with the Rams. They have tremendous star box office talent. But their depth is not quite there. And it might not quite be there for a Super Bowl. Not like the Patriots, who have a way of stepping up no matter who it is at the most opportune times, coupled with the greatest quarterback of all time. This is why I predict the New England Patriots 31, the LA Rams 27. I think it'll be a 58-point game. It'll be an offensive show, no doubt. But at the end of the day, how can you bet against Brady? He just knows how to do it. Goff, on the other hand, I don't quite trust all that much. I just don't. He's a great young quarterback, but he's nowhere near the class that Brady's in. And I'll make a quick point about Drew Brees. I love Drew Brees, 40 years of age now. But there's a difference from Drew Brees, a top 10 QB of all time, and Tom Brady. As much as I hate to admit it, I would have thought that Brees would have put up maybe a few more points on the board at home in the NFC Championship. He got robbed, no doubt about it, but it would have been nice if he had put a few more points up on the board. You never have to say that with Brady. Heck, even last year in the Super Bowl, he lost. And he put up the most passing yards of all time in a Super Bowl. That is the best way to lose. You can't lose any better than that. You're literally setting records. And it really means, from my end, that I like the Patriots. I think they'll win. I'm pretty convinced that they'll win. And we look back last year. A lot of you know I did my Fab Five of the Week. I picked the biggest five football games from weeks three onward into the playoffs. And ended up, I tallied at 99 games, I predicted. And 64 out of 99 were correct. And this was based on Vegas spreads via Bet365. That's a pretty strong indication. And I'll be honest, when I'm outside this booth making picks, I'm not that great. I win some, I lose some. Obviously, the payout's always a lot higher than the losses, which is why I do quite well. However, when I'm in this booth, I usually make big predictions, and you can hold me to it next Tuesday, based on Sunday's Super Bowl. 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and anywhere around the world. I've got Tom Brady because he wins. He is adapted to stay elite by releasing the ball quicker than any quarterback in the league. He doesn't have the same arm strength. He does not have the same accuracy. But he keeps getting it done as the talent erodes around him. And that depth factor, I think, will be a huge, huge point in this game. I think it could sense, you know, I sense that we could see a huge play in an opportune time by a no-name Patriot. I think it'll be a close game. 31-27 is my pick. I take the over 56.5 points as well, but I really, really think that depth is going to play an issue and that the Patriots will emerge victorious. We'll have to see. We will have to see. But I really like the Patriots. And let me just say about the Rams, I think in their heart of hearts, they know they don't deserve to be here. I think they understand and know that the Saints deserve to be in that Super Bowl. That may play a psychological factor. That may be a little bit of karma returning the favor. We shall see. But tune in, folks. Sunday, coverage starts at 6, CTV in Canada. There's a multitude of ways to watch it. Otherwise, a ton of streaming providers will be talking about it. But I'll be honest. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be a good game. And at the end of the day, I got the Patriots. I've put my money where my mouth is. You can hold me to the fire next week. We'll break it down, as of course. I got Brady throwing two TDs, over 300 yards, and a 31-27 win. Folks, thanks for tuning in. This is The Crunch. I'm your host, Nick LaPenna, on the Radio Laurier Network. Note that these audio files will be uploaded to radiolaurier.com/the-crunch. That is coming soon. Last week's episode should be there literally any day now. And this will be up there as well. Hold my feet to the fire. I got $15 on the Patriots and over for a nice sum if they do it. If not, you can tear me down on the air next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Folks, that's all I got today. Have yourselves a wonderful night. We'll see you next week. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. You can come.